You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome to a Wednesday. It's Hour 1 with the boys, Dan and the Danettes. Dan Patrick Show will check in with the head coach of the world champion Lakers, Frank Vogel, a little bit later on. Dan Orlovsky, the former NFL quarterback, now an analyst for the Mothership, will recap what we saw last night as the Titans roll over the Bills, 42-16. The Jets have released Le'Veon Bell. Dodgers, Braves, that's later on today. And the Rays and the Astros, as the Astros try to hold on, the Rays trying to go to the World Series, and the Dodgers down 2-0, and they have to wait an extra game to get Clayton Kershaw back. 877-3DP-SHOW, email address dp@danpatrick.com, our Twitter handle @DPShow. We say good morning to everybody watching on Peacock. It's a free app that you can download, and you can watch this program all 3 hours, and also those listening on our 376 radio affiliates around the country, including Juneau, Alaska. McLovin, we'll have a poll question. We got a play of the day. We got a stat of the day or two. But we begin with the Tennessee Titans. NFL players like routine. It's one of the great things about playing once a week. No team in the league has had less routine than the Tennessee Titans have had over the last couple of weeks. They had 24 positive COVID tests with the players and the staff since September 24th. They didn't even know for sure that they were playing yesterday. But no positive tests yesterday. The game was played. And somehow, even with very limited practice time, they dominated an undefeated Buffalo Bills team. And the parallel for the Titans, I guess, would be the baseball Miami Marlins, because they were the first team to have a rash of positive tests. They missed games. They came back. They made the playoffs. Tennessee's now 4-0 and a commanding lead in the AFC South. They got a veteran team. They got a team that really, I think, epitomizes the personality of their coach, and they know the system. You got Ryan Tannehill, the resurgence of Ryan Tannehill. You got Derrick Henry, and you've got a pretty stout defense in there as well. Don't make mistakes. Run the football. Pick your opportunities to throw the football, and that's been a magic success, a magic elixir for this team. And I wondered the sustainability. Last year during the playoffs, pleasant surprise. And everybody knew what was going to happen. Tannehill might throw for 100 yards. Derrick Henry was going to run it right down your throat. And that defense was going to be opportunistic. And I wondered if they could continue to do it, because it doesn't take long for a defense to go, okay, now how do we counteract what we see with the Tennessee Titans? We haven't seen that yet. Granted, it's only a month into the season or 4 games into the season, but they're 4-0 for the first time since they opened 10-0 back in 2008. That was the last year they won the AFC South. They finished 13-3 that year. But you start to look at Ryan Tannehill with what he's done with the Titans. You know, when they traded him from Miami to Tennessee, and he was going to be a backup quarterback with Marcus Mariota. And I think at the time when they got him, I said I wouldn't be surprised if 4 or 5 games into the season he would be your starter. I just didn't think Marcus Mariota was going to be able to recapture what he was at Oregon. And maybe he doesn't get that opportunity, but Ryan Tannehill took advantage of that. He's had 17 starts in Tennessee. He's 13-4. He's completed 68% of his passes. TD to interception ratio is 5-1. He's thrown 36 touchdown passes and 7 interceptions, and passer rating is 114. Those are all elite stat numbers here for any quarterback, and he's been able to do that. There's probably still people going, man, I'm not quite sure, you know. All right, they're 4-0 right now. They play in the AFC South. All right, okay. Well, you play who's in front of you. And they had 2 weeks that they weren't sure if they were playing the Steelers, and then they were playing Buffalo, and Buffalo is a good team. But Tennessee at home last night is a 3.5-point underdog, by the way, and they dominated. Here's Ryan Tannehill after the game.
We said a lot of things throughout the past couple of weeks, and things that were being said and personal things that were said against our team, our guys, really felt uncalled for. So, yeah, we were a little ticked off about how we've been treated, how we've been looked at over the past couple of weeks, and really just stuck together through that process and believed in each other and wanted to come out and play our game and play how we believe in each other and knew what we could do. And we did that.
Oh, a little chip on your shoulder there with Ryan Tannehill.
Boom, they were ticked off.
Yes.
Boom!
Oh, my God. That's bulletin board material. Hey, slow your roll there, Ryan.
One thing you don't want to do is get Ryan Tannehill ticked off.
No, you do not. No, you do not. Yes, McLovin.
So I have a poll question that kind of goes to a ranking. It can transition to a ranking.
Okay.
Who would you most want to get a beer with out of these three quarterbacks? Ryan Tannehill, Nick Foles, or Andy Dalton? And where do you put Ryan Tannehill in the want to get a beer with rankings if you were going to rank all 32 quarterbacks? Like, is he fun?
I have no idea.
I don't think so. I think he's in the bottom third. I think he's a family dude.
Well, Nick Foles is not drinking beer.
Right.
Now, he might sit there and watch me drink a beer.
I don't know. Because he's a pastor.
I don't think he's killing it. I don't think he's belling up to the bar.
But yes. He seemed so nice when we just had him on.
Oh, no, I like him. But McLevin said you're going to have a beer with. So I have to rule him out because he's not going to have a beer with me.
Yeah, Nick Foles is a lovely walk and a cup of coffee guy.
Yeah, we might go to Starbucks and sit.
Is a lovely walk and coffee with Nick Foles better than a beer with Andy Dalton?
Man. Andy actually is my number one seed at that group.
We all know that, Andrew.
Know that.
No kidding.
Come on. But Andy Dalton, he's got red hair. He's got probably got funny stories. I don't know.
What the hell does having red
First
hair
First of all, you shouldn't be including your crush on the
Yeah, you
got to
remove
question.
Andy Dalton.
Look where he's like, well, Ryan Tannehill. What are you going to talk to Ryan Tannehill about over a beer? He's going to have his wife and his kids four tables over watching it, just like they were watching
You're
last
the
night.
One that brought up the question.
Okay, new poll question. Who's more handsome, Case Keenum, Andy Dalton?
That's a tie.
You want to throw Kirk D. Cousins in there, too?
Oh, I knew there was someone who belonged on that list
okay.
that I couldn't think of.
Yes.
I was like, this list is incomplete.
Okay, so I have Kirk D. Cousins. I don't think he drinks either.
Ginger beer, maybe. I got yeah. Good for the blood.
Yeah. So if I had Kirk D. Cousins, Ryan Tannehill, Andy Dalton, nobody is breaking this down anywhere else in America.
I don't see Russell Wilson belling up to the bar either.
Yeah, but Russ would be. Yeah, Russ probably doesn't drink either.
Yeah, but he's cool.
Maybe Sierra. We'll have a drink with me. But now Russ would be fun. Like, I don't know who's going to have a beer. Brady used to crush beers. I don't know if he drinks beers anymore. He'd be a guy that, you know, toss a few back. Yeah, McLeod.
Know who I would have put on the list till you introduced us to him at Pebble Beach was Matt Ryan. I didn't know he was a fun guy.
Yes, a lot of fun. While he's still in Atlanta, who knows where he's going to be after this. But yeah, Matt Ryan's a good guy. I enjoyed talking to him.
I already got a tweet that Justin Herbert belongs on the list, too. I don't know if that's fair. He's young.
Wow. I don't know if we need to go down this road.
Okay. We like all these guys.
Gardner Minshew is the guy I'd probably have a beer with. How's that?
Yeah, you'll end up in, like, New Mexico 18 hours later. You're like, how do we get here?
Hallucinating.
Yeah. We're on a bus.
We're in Jacksonville.
Yeah. How do we get on this bus and we're in New Mexico?
Where's my clothes?
Why?
What?
Wait, Albuquerque?
Like some kind of Jim Morrison out.
Telling you, man, on a fourth
snake.
Down.
Yeah. I remember going toe-to-toe with Brady. Yes, McLevin.
You could get a Zinfandel with Daniel Jones. I don't know if he's a beer guy either.
Why are we doing this right now?
I don't know, but I love it.
Yeah, and then when we reach out to the PR... See, Fritzy's cringing over there because he knows he has to reach out to the PR people, with these teams. Hey, could we get such and such a... Oh, you want Minshew? I don't know. You guys in New Mexico or something? Yeah. Oh, you want Nick Foles? I don't know. You going to a Starbucks?
I think we weren't listening to that opening segment. What are you guys doing over there?
Oh, I watched a lot of the Braves and the Dodgers last night, and this is not going well. Clayton Kershaw with back spasms. He has to tap out, a couple hours before. You get somebody who hadn't pitched in the postseason. You throw him in the mix here, and the Braves hold off the Dodgers. They're up 2-0. I'm watching the Braves, and I'm trying to think who they remind me of. And then I thought they're kind of like the San Diego Padres, but better. They're a fun team. They're not afraid. They have talent. And... Yeah, they probably look at themselves coming into this series as, why aren't we the favorites? We got an unbelievable pitching staff, and we got young hitters. Freddie Freeman, can't get him out. And it feels like the Dodgers are playing, they're tentative. The Braves aren't. Braves just go out there, and it's like, all right, let's go. Let's put them up. Let's see what we can do. And they're playing with confidence and not afraid, and you have that talent there, and you've seen that through the first two games. An awkward moment after the game. We talk about questions sometimes that are asked to athletes, and we wonder why these athletes have a problem with it. It's like Walker Buehler being asked about his Lululemon pants that he was pitching with. The Braves reliever, Mark Melancon, was asked this question last night.
I mean, can you take a positive out of even though you blew most of that lead? He's still up 2-0.
Huh? I don't really understand your question.
Can you still take something positive out of this? You're still up 2-0 in the series despite, you know, blowing a big lead. Can you leave this thing feeling, you know, good that you survived this game?
I think that's a terrible question. I'm not even going to answer it.
All you have to do is say, we won. And I will say that the reporter doubled down. And I went, oh, no, don't double down. It just, I think he was trying to talk himself into a good answer. And it wasn't going to happen there. Let's play it again.
I mean, can you take a positive out of even though you blew most of that lead? You're still up 2-0?
I don't really understand your question.
Can you still take something positive out of this? You're still up 2-0 in the series despite, you know, blowing a big lead. Can you leave this thing feeling, you know, good that you survived this game?
I think that's a terrible question. I'm not even going to answer it.
How about, I mean, you can frame it in a lot of different ways. And look, I ask questions for a living, but there are times when I do the same thing. You ask and then you answer a question. But in a situation like that, you know, the Dodgers, you guys allowed the Dodgers to come back. What's the positive you take out of this from the pitching staff? Because if you say, look, we won. Okay. Like, I don't know where he's going. I don't know what he wants out of this answer, because there's always a motive behind your question. And, hey, I think he wants to say, yeah, you know what? We feel bad that we gave up that lead. You know, we got to have questions here. We didn't want to get to our bullpen. We want to save our bullpen. Whatever it is you're trying to get, but you're trying to get it, and you're trying to wrestle him to the ground. Yes, Eden.
By telling the guy twice, you blew most of that lead.
Well, first you blew the lead, and then you blew most of the lead, because he said, we didn't blow a lead. What are you talking about?
Can you take anything positive out of that? I mean, you're up 2-0. Yeah. I mean, that's good, but you did blow the lead.
Yeah, we didn't blow the lead. And that, all you have to do is say, we won. Next question.
I got no problems. I'm not answering that.
We won. Next question. Yeah, Paul.
And then you gave it up to Muncy. Well, did you see Walker Buehler's pants the other day? We'll talk about that then.
What do you think of Walker Buehler's pants while I'm on the topic here? Yes, Tom.
It's a negative-laced question, but is it also a little rude on the player's part when you can just kind of say, you know, this is the championship series. They got a good team. Teams come back all the time. You know, it would have been nice to have that cushion and not have it come down to the last out like that. Got a little scary at the end, but, you know, we're still up 2-0. So I think we're going to be all right.
Why is it up to the player to help the reporter?
It's not up to the player, but just be as awkward and negative as that question was, he could have just taken the high road.
Instead
of making him look bad in front of his
he made
colleagues.
Himself look bad.
I think he'd just say, you know what?
He made himself look bad.
Teams come back all the time. Bottom line is we won.
The reporter doesn't help a pitcher when he's on the mound. Now you want the pitcher to help the reporter in the press room.
I always cringe though when someone says, that's a stupid question. That's a horrible question. Like, why would you ask me something?
But Todd,
like that?
You support horrible questions.
I do. And ask, answer, ask.
Yes.
I'm the king of that.
Yes.
I understand what you're saying there.
Thank you, Todd. You can relate to that reporter.
I can totally relate to that. And because of that...
you related to that reporter?
Maybe. He may be a distant cousin. That was very poorly worded, and he was looking to stir something up.
And then you gave it up to Muncy, and then did it bring back when Senior took it deep?
And then you almost blew it.
Which one of those was the worst pitch you threw?
Yes, McClellan.
This wasn't a real question. This is like a Howard Stern thing, right? This is... We're breaking it down. This guy was messing around. He couldn't have possibly asked that as a serious question. Like, we break down bad questions at the podium.
You think somebody slipped in during COVID to ask a question?
No, this is probably like a shock jock.
Isn't Stuttering John slipping into a press conference.
This is not the Atlanta Journal-Constitution who asks this. This has got to be a radio guy who is trying to get something.
I think
out.
I know who it is. I think it's somebody who is a professional.
Like a real reporter asks that question?
Have you been in press conferences?
Yes, nobody asks a question like that. That's like...
Oh, my gosh.
Usually it's
I can't tell
lame...
you the number of times where I'll go, can you believe, I can't believe you just asked that. There are more bad questions asked than good questions.
Right, but bad questions, like lame questions, not like intentionally trying to start a fight with a missed fact. That one was over the top. That guy's a radio guy.
But I don't think he was intentionally trying to start a fight. I think he was just asking a really stupid question. Sometimes people say things that you don't realize how like offensive it is when it comes out of your mouth, and then you're like, oh, dang, I guess that was dumb.
The Dodger relievers would love to have gotten a question like this had they won. You know? Like, the Braves won the game. The bigger picture is you got the Dodgers teetering right now. And this is a Braves team that's just building up momentum. And that's scary when you see it. It's like the Rays against the Astros. You know, the Rays do everything right. Like, they just top to bottom, they do it right. They're not flashy. You can't name probably more than three players on the team, but they do it right. And that's, you know, the Astros are obviously in trouble down 3-0. And Jose Altuve has the yips at second base. I've seen this a couple of times. You go back to Steve Sachs. He had issues with this. There are other players, and their second baseman, Chuck Knobloch, just throwing the ball from second to first because you don't throw it hard, you don't throw it soft, and you throw it somewhere in between usually. And nobody is going to have sympathy for Jose Altuve, but it is painful to watch any player go through this. Shortstop, you usually throw it at the same speed. Third base, you throw it at the same speed. Even a pitcher on a comebacker has problems because he's not used to just throwing it. He tries to guide it over there. And you have Jose Altuve, who can't throw from second base to first base. It's either I'm going to throw it too hard, too soft, in the dirt, a little bit wide. And all it is you're playing catch. And it's one of those great mysteries, but you saw that last night. But back to the Dodgers. I'm watching this, and the Braves were doing the right things. And Freddie Freeman, there's a reason why you're the MVP. They can't get him out. And it feels like his wife and kids are getting a whole lot of airtime there because every time Freddie comes to the plate, let's show mom and your son. He gets a hit, and you show mom and your son. Comes home, home plate after a home run, mom and son. Like, they should be getting per diem here for the hours that they're putting in there at the ballpark. But we'll talk some baseball here with the Braves holding off the Dodgers, and the Rays go up 3-0 in the Astros. Dodgers, Braves later on this afternoon, Rays in the Astros. We'll come back and we'll talk to Dan Orlovsky about just some NFL stuff, certainly with what we saw with Tennessee now. And the approach that the Titans had with Josh Allen was very similar to the approach teams are trying to have with Patrick Mahomes, believe it or not. I'll let Orlovsky explain that to you. It's coming up on 19 after the hour. Your phone calls as well. Take a break after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Need to make it legal? Make it LegalZoom.com. They've been around for nearly 20 years. They've been part of this program for a decade at least. And it's great to be able to tell you about somebody who's a partner of the show who can help you. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but that's a good thing. You don't leave your home. You don't get billed by the hour. But if you have serious questions, specific questions, they're dedicated to helping you find the right solutions. Whether you need a will or living trust to protect your family, or if you need help starting a business the right way with a DBA, LLC, nonprofit, or more, LegalZoom can help you do it. And it's easy to get started online. If you need guidance, their network of independent attorneys can provide legal advice to ensure that you're going to make the right decisions. We're all adjusting to the new normal. It's important to have proven solutions to help us overcome the unique challenges we're all facing. If you need legal help, LegalZoom is a proven, reliable resource. Visit LegalZoom.com today to take care of some important things you need to know. That's LegalZoom.com. You need to make it legal. Make it LegalZoom.com. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern, or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Dan Patrick Show at FoxSportsRadio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app. The Braves reliever, Mark Melancon. E me on that. Mark Melancon. I think I pronounced Mark wrong, right? Is that what it was?
Melancon?
Melancon.
Melancon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Melancon.
That was actually the question just before.
Yeah.
Was, how do you pronounce your name?
Yeah. By the way, I mentioned that the Braves pitchers, they strike out a lot. Ian Anderson, he looked pretty good, That's they were shutting out the Dodgers, 15 innings in the postseason, 22 strikeouts. Max Fried has been great as well. But you're probably going to have to wait to game 4 to get to Clayton Kershaw. That is, if he's healthy enough. We'll get to phone calls here. We'll come up with a poll question. 877-3DP-SHOO. Email address dp@danpatrick.com. He is Dan Orlovsky, NFL Live analyst, and football fans can watch him weekdays, as I did yesterday, NFL Live at 4 Eastern on the Mothership. How many people still on the Josh Allen bandwagon there, Dan?
I think the number fell off a lot last night, man. I think I'm still a big-time believer in him this year. Just a bad game. You know, the thing that happened was Vrabel just decided to become Belichick for the night and just said, I'm going to make you play patient football, and he's a big-time player with his arm and all that, and he didn't do that. So big growth for him. That has to come off of last night, but – I still think he's in the top three of the MVP race for sure.
Explain that what Vrabel's doing as a disciple of Bill Belichick defensively.
Yeah, I mean, every game they're trying to change who they are, you know, and so you obviously game plan for certain tendencies or personalities or what you expect to come from them as a defense, and then they kind of change exactly what they want to do. And so last night, you know, Tennessee for most of this season was a man coverage team or cover three team defensively. And then all of a sudden they played a ton of cover two zone, two high safeties, five zone defenders underneath. And they just forced Josh to play patient and take boring checkdowns and 5 yard completions and 5 yard completions. And he's not wired like that as a player. He's a big play making quarterback that wants to push the ball downfield. And it's just really difficult. I remember in 2011, I had to go play against the Patriots. This is when I was in Indy and Peyton was with us. Peyton was going through his neck stuff. So I'm getting ready to start, and he must have said that week as I prepared 100 times, you have to outgrind Belichick. You just have to outgrind him, and you've got to get the game into the fourth quarter. And that's what Josh was not able to do last night. Like they forced him to play a disciplined style of quarterback, and he wasn't able to do it. And that was really well done by Vrabel.
Are the Titans a contender?
Legitimate? Oh, for sure. You know, I picked them to win that division. Just because I think that if you look at the overall strength of the football team, what is it? Offensive line. Their offensive line is fantastic. Yeah. Okay. So then you go, what does that allow you to do? When you got a good offensive line, it allows everybody else's strengths to be magnified. All right. So Ryan Tannehill is really good in the play action game. Well, if you got a good offensive line that one can run the football and two is good with their play action fakes, then Tannehill is better at that. A.J. Brown's a big-time physical receiver. That marries well with the play-action game because you get him crossing the field. You got to be able to make contested catches when you do that. And then, you know, their play caller, Arthur Smith, I think is like one of the more interesting hires of the last 2 years in the NFL. Like when Mike Vrabel made him offensive coordinator 2 years ago, no one heard about the guy. Like I had never heard of him. And all of a sudden, he'll be a head coach next year. And so, you know, I think that if their secondary continues to play better as the season goes on, yeah, they're going to be a problem, man. They were a problem last year. Tannehill's been MVP level football since he became their quarterback. So they're really well coached. They got strengths on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They got a physical receiver, physical run game, and opportunistic defense.
It feels like we got maybe four teams in the AFC who could win it all. Maybe two, three teams in the NFC. That sound about
right? Yeah, I'd say AFC teams that can win it all, I think, are Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Baltimore, Tennessee. I probably still throw Buffalo into that mix. I don't think we saw the Buffalo team last night that we've seen or expect.
Yeah.
You know, if Indy's quarterback stops throwing the ball to the other team, I think they're in the conversation as well.
That ain't happening.
But too many question marks at that position. And the NFC, you're looking at Seattle, Green Bay, and Tampa Bay, to me, are the teams that stand out. And the Rams. I think the Rams, with the way that they're playing, are four bona fide contenders.
And Saints?
My concern with the Saints are this. Your defense is not good enough to play the style of football you want to play offensively. Like they cannot be explosive offensively right now. They'll play well and they'll score and they'll be efficient, but you can't screen pass your way to the Super Bowl. And if your defense is going to get 30 hung on them every week, you've got to be explosive on offense. Like you just have to be to counter that. And right now they're incapable of being explosive because there's the reality that Drew's arm is not good enough to do that.
Talking to Dan Orlovsky, NFL Live analyst. The Le'Veon Bell situation is interesting because when he was with Pittsburgh, I said, you know, I don't want to give a running back a second contract. I just there. I can find running backs. I know Le'Veon Bell was special. I don't want to give you that kind of money. He goes to the Jets. Not a good fix. You got a coach who doesn't want him there.
Yeah.
And now he's out to pasture. But it feels like Le'Veon Bell still has something. And I don't know what system he fits in where you really take advantage of this. The team I thought of initially was the Chicago Bears could maybe use somebody like Le'Veon Bell. But if you were going to handicap where he should go, where would you have him land?
Yeah, I mean, the Bears are certainly high on my list. I'd say Chicago. I'd say Pittsburgh. I'd say Philadelphia. You know, it's teams that you go, okay, because I think it's got to be, one, a contending football team.
Mm-hmm.
And two, a team that's got a really strong culture. Chicago, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Seattle, no. Green Bay, no. I don't see New England.
Why is it every time a player is available, we always say New England?
Because Belichick's always the king of like, hey, I'll buy low and make this player that just got released. It used to be this brand name player into a really good one. You know, I don't see New England. I just don't. I think Pittsburgh's a really good fit. I think Philly's got to get somebody outside of Miles Sanders to be a part of that offense. He's such an integral part, that the tailback for them. So I think that's a really big deal. Baltimore, I don't see. Kansas City, I don't see. You know, Buffalo would be interesting with Zach Moss getting banged up. You know, I think that would be an interesting one because Singletary's really good, but you always want complementary pieces. And then in the NFC, like, Tampa's intriguing to me. I've said this for 2 months now. Tampa has to find a pass-catching tailback. You can tell me all you want that that's Leonard Fournette. It's not, guys. It's not. Leonard Fournette caught a bunch of checkdowns last year.
Yeah.
And you can tell me all you want that it's Ronald Jones. Watch the tape. Like, just watch the tape. It's not Ronald Jones. So I think Tampa would be a very interesting place because they have to find a pass-catching weapon, versatile back.
Josh Norman getting stiff-armed last night by Derrick Henry. You know, when you have these moments and you can't hide from them, what's that like?
Yeah, I know that all too well. you know, like, you got to swallow your pride, man. You got to kind of remove yourself from social media for a short period of time. And listen, you're either going to embrace it and laugh with everyone, or you're going to get really angry and offended that they're going to laugh at you.
How often does it come up when you?
Daily.
It does.
Oh, yeah. Daily. I mean, if it's not.
Well, explain to the audience what happened, just so we know. We're all in on the joke.
Yeah. So 2008, we're playing. It's my first start of my NFL career. We're playing on the road against Minnesota. Early in the game, we're 0-4, 0-5 at this point. Early in the game, we're backed up on, I think, our 1 or 2 yard line. It's 3rd and 10, something like that. And we call a play. I don't like it. Call timeout. Go to my coaches. Hey, can we call a different play? No, they say no. So we get into the huddle. Thanks for that, coach. We get into the huddle, and it's just kind of a drop back pass. Again, from the 1 yard line. I'm in the shotgun. We're double teaming Jared Allen, who's to my left. We decide to not double team Jared Allen. He splits the double team. And just like in a reaction thing, I move backwards and sideways at the same time, but more backwards than sideways. And I step out of bounds, untouched, for a safety. I'm actually running out of bounds by a good yard before ever realizing I'm out of bounds. So, you know, that ends up being a safety. We lose that game 12-10. We go 0-16, ironically. And so I'd say it comes up every day, man. When someone tries to remind me, like, Dan, you ran out of the end zone. Like, guys, I'm completely aware of that. Like, I was there. So I find it pretty funny, man.
But also, when you think about it, like, if you say something bad about somebody's team when you're on NFL Live, their response is not critiquing you about what you said about their team. It's like, how do you know football? You ran out of the end zone, Dan, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Do we really want to trust what you say? You're the guy that ran out of the end zone. It's like, do I have a comeback for you? Yes, I've got 100 of comebacks for you. I don't want to use any on you because you're still stuck in 2008.
Well, Chris Webber had the Timeout Foundation. Did you name your foundation back of the end zone or out of the end zone or?
You know, now that I thought about it, I've never really thought about that. My foundation was egotistically after my name. but now that, like, you know, I have in my Twitter bio, like, end zone should be 11 yards type thing. I still want to confirm that end zone was 30 feet. You know, it very easily could have been 27. But I know this. Tom Brady forgot what down it was last week.
Whoa.
And he's still the greatest quarterback ever. So it gives me a good feeling in my stomach.
I'll leave you with this. The possibility of an NFL bubble for the postseason.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer to me. It's
where do we hold the games, though? Dan, I was thinking if you did an NFL stadium and a college stadium in the same city. Like, let's say the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum and, you know, where the Rams and Chargers play.
Sure.
Or you did Detroit and you did Michigan, you know, the big house. And then you did something along the East Coast. Could you bubbleize those cities and take advantage of two different stadiums there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I think it's like, I keep going back to this with the NFL. Your number one job is to avoid the worst case scenario this year, to try to pull this off. Now, 5-6 weeks through, it seems to be going well, or as well as we could have hoped, fingers crossed, and the flexibility has been great. But my question has always been to the NFL, why not? And if it's the sheer amount of number or when it comes to people, that's fine. But the playoffs is going to diminish that, and it's going to minimize that. And so, you know, if you're the NFL, you better have plans to pull this off and make this happen. And so, you know, I think you could look at Florida. I think that you can look at LA. I think you could look in an Arizona area. My only caveat with the Midwest location potentially is I don't want to be a team that has to get penalized and have to play an outdoor game in January while you get to play in a domed stadium in LA or perfect weather in LA. So that would be the logistical aspect that they would have to figure out to kind of make it an even playing field.
Dan Orlovsky's Safety Foundation.
Safety first.
Safety. We got it. There you go.
Who's better than you, man?
We don't have time to list. Hey, it's great to see you. Hope you're having fun on NFL Live, and thanks for joining us as always.
My pleasure. Thanks, bud.
That's Dan Orlovsky. Safety first. We got it. See, you know what? You got to have a sense of humor in this business. A sense of humor in life will take you a long way. And if you're going to be an analyst, you got to have a sense of humor because people are going to bring up the worst moments of your career. And Chris Webber, when he called the timeout in the national title game against North Carolina, that's as bad as it gets. So what did he do? We're going to call it the Timeout Foundation. I'm going to get to that punchline before you do. And yeah, Doug Gottlieb has brought this up before when, you know, he stole a credit card at Notre Dame. And Doug acknowledges that he did this his freshman year, and he brings it up first. Like, he knows he did it. He was stupid that he did it. But he does, you know, he does admit it, embrace it, understand it. Like, not embrace it, but he knows it's his. He's got to own it. And people will bring that up. If Doug says something against your team or a player, hey, what do you know? Look at what you did at Notre Dame. I mean, that's two decades ago. You know, Dan Orlovsky with this, Chris Webber, you know, there are just certain things that have happened. Bill Buckner at one point finally said, okay, I made the error. I'm going to make fun of me on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Where I drop the ball you throw to me, but I catch the baby being thrown out of the window. You know, to get to that point, it's difficult. Because everywhere you go, and people think, well, you're the only one bringing this up. But Dan says it's brought up every day. Because if he says, hey, I got a problem with whoever, that fan base is going to go, what do you know? You ran out of the end zone. Yeah, Paul.
The Orlovsky play where he ran out of the end zone, it didn't cost him the season. It wasn't, you know, that big in the scope of things. But the actual video is so entertaining because he's still looking downfield for the open man, and he's 7 yards.
He never gave up on the play, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, he's 7 yards out of bounds. That's why the video is entertaining. Good sense of humor.
When his back runs into the clock, the play clock, that's when he should have known that he was really out of the end zone. I'm just joking there. Anybody on the other side?
I'm watching the video again right now.
The end zone.
Jared Allen's chasing him down.
Back in the end zone. Yeah, I know.
And Jared Allen's pointing, safety, safety, safety. And Orlovsky's like, check down, trying to look for the tight end, break it open. It's great. He never gives up on the play.
Yes, we love it.
I'm watching it, too. The problem is he keeps going through the play as if he doesn't know he ran. Oh, oh,
I know.
My God.
I know. Ran out of real. He thought he was in the CFL. I mean, come on. All right, we'll take a break. Play of the day coming up. And we'll dive into what's going on with the Dodgers and Jose Altuve, the Yips at second base. Back after this in the Dan Patrick Show. Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Oh, my God.
The play.
The play is called play.
Of the day.
Runner left side, got it!
Check this out.
2-1 delivery. Swinging a fly ball, left center field, deep. Going back is Pollock at the track, at the wall. It's gone! Caught by Mark Melancon in the Braves bullpen. Solo home run by Ozzie Albies. And there's a little insurance. It's 8-3.
It's your play of the day. It's courtesy of WCNN 680 The Fan, Braves Radio Network. Melancon had an interesting night. Closed out the game. Also caught a home run in the bullpen. I think he's caught a couple of home run balls. Play of the day brought to you by Traeger, the wood pellet grill, offering Wi-Fi connected convenience, real wood-fired flavor. The best way to take your game days from ordinary to epic. Learn more by visiting a local dealer, heading to TraegerGrills.com/DP Show. Not sure when Clayton Kershaw is going to be able to pitch. And prior to being scratched, the three-time Cy Young winner was 2-0 in the playoffs with 19 strikeouts in 14 innings and appeared determined to slay his October demons here. As Dave Roberts said, it's kind of World Series or bust every year, and he's right, but the stakes are even higher this year because you look at the Lakers winning. The Dodgers have been here. They've gotten here before. They've gotten farther than this before. And been on the cusp and haven't been able to hoist the commissioner's trophy. You know, Doc Rivers lost his job with the Clippers earlier this year. And Dave Roberts knows that he's probably managing for his job. And I think that's pretty much cut and dried. That's how high the stakes are. I got an email from a professor who was talking about Jose Altuve and the Yips. And the professor says, I don't know what his, you know, he's a professor in. But I'm guessing psychology. Jose Altuve had a terrible season. It's been reported that he is someone who is relatively humble and wants to be liked. For a time, I was not sure if his poor season was just a random baseball thing or he was really affected by the scandal. Seeing the Yips at second base starts to clarify that he truly is struggling with overthinking. The Yips are the most obvious function of thinking when a play should be automatic. They are very difficult to overcome because it's tough to stop overthinking. It seems pretty obvious now that he is really having a hard time overcoming the scrutiny. Imagine if there were fans this season. I mean, can you imagine the fans in the stands if he had the Yips right now? And you don't even have support of the home fans here. And you're on an island. When that ground ball comes to you, and then what happens? It's almost like Lonzo Ball has the Yips. When he gets ready to shoot, he doesn't want to shoot, but he's wide open. I'm supposed to shoot. I'm a professional. And you could see where he's hesitant in wanting to shoot. Most shooters can't wait to get the ball. Lonzo Ball, it feels like he wants to pass the ball as soon as he gets it. And here's Altuve, who by all accounts is a very good second baseman. But you start to think and then you become mechanical. Athletes will tell you all the time. They've told me all the time. I don't think. You get to the point where you've thought. So when it does happen, you don't think. You just react. And I still go back to the question that I asked John McEnroe many, many years ago. I said, how do you do it? He goes, I don't know. Because he doesn't break it down. He didn't think about it. He just does it. It's reactionary to him. And that explained everything to me. The great ones don't think. They've already thought to get to the moment. So when it does happen, it's reactionary. And Jose Altuve is overthinking everything here. And whatever happened in the offseason, whatever happened with the criticisms of cheating, it eventually soaks in. It seeps in, whether it's by proxy or not. And he was the poster child for cheating. And this was the most beloved guy on the team. Remember, you'd have those moments when the Astros would play the Yankees and he'd stand next to Aaron Judge and you'd see, you know, the height differential between the two. Everybody thought it was, boy, that's a guy you can root for. And now all of a sudden, you're public enemy number one in baseball. And you've seen this happen now in the postseason a couple of times. He can't get the ball to second base. And you probably say, I got an 8-year-old who can do it. Yeah, because the 8-year-old's not thinking. The 8-year-old just get the ball and throw. Jose Altuve is going, I got it. Okay, I got to get the grounder and I got to throw it. And as crazy as you're going to say, that sounds, who was the Mickey, the Mets catcher? Mackey Sasser. He couldn't throw the ball back to the mound. As simple as throwing the ball back to the mound. And he would lob it back there. John Lester, the pitcher for the Cubs, he couldn't throw to first base. Guy'd be on first base leading off. He had a comebacker right through his glove, I think, over. Like, he just, it's just the mind is so powerful in positive and negative ways. Yeah, Paul.
I saw a thing recently. You know how baseball players, when they're up to bat, they adjust their gloves 8 times between every pitch? They do that so they're not thinking about stuff. A psychologist wrote about why a guy adjusts his gloves and taps his bat 3 times and brushes his leg in the dirt 3 times. You find a routine that you do every time that keeps your mind occupied with that routine and not thinking fastball, curveball, slider, fastball, curveball, slider. Because if you start thinking, you're not hitting.
Chad in Kentucky joins us on the show. Hey, Chad, what's on your mind?
Hey, DB, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question pertains to the press conference, post-game press conference with the Atlanta Braves. So I'm sure you've been in these press conferences. Rule of thumb, when you ask a dumb question like that, how long before you can ask another question?
I don't know if there's a moratorium on how long. Let me play. Here's the question ask of the Braves reliever, Mark Melancon.
I mean, can you take a positive out of even though you blew most of that lead? You still up 2-0?
I don't really understand your question.
Can you still take something positive out of this? You're still up 2-0 in the series despite, blowing a big lead. Can you leave this thing feeling, good that you survived this game?
I think that's a terrible question. I'm not even going to answer it.
That's a question you ask after the team lost, not after they won. Now you can say, hey, what concerns you about, the Dodgers coming back, in the ninth inning? But, I mean, you can phrase it where you can get something out of it. Where once you say you blew the lead, well, you didn't blow the lead. You blew the margin of the lead, but you didn't blow the lead. And then so you've automatically got his defenses up. So you're not going to get whatever answer you're looking for. It ain't coming. Yeah, McLovin.
It's like saying, are you panicking now that you're up 2-0? Or how do you feel when your back's against the wall up 2-0?
Yeah. How nervous do you feel you're up 2-0? They did win the game.
They might be a bit nervous, though.
Maybe if they start thinking about this. They just play. I told you, they're a better version of the Padres. They're young, and they just go out there and they rake. And the pitching has been underrated. Harold Reynolds from the Baseball Network will join us coming up next hour. We'll talk to Frank Vogel, the Lakers head coach, in the final hour. More of your phone calls as well here on the Dan Patrick Show.